Welcome to Going Bananas. Peter Shubb, it's absolutely an honor and a pleasure to have you as our guest. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Ian. It's a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely great to have you. Out of all the shows that I've worked on, I've never had the opportunity to work with you. A legend, honestly, recognized by many, many people about how great you are. I was telling you earlier today about how your art transcends from circus to stage to your teacher. It's truly a pleasure to have such a recognized talent in our studio.
Oh my God, so much flattery. This is lovely.
It's not flattery. It's what we feel about you in the business.
That's nice.
Well, I mean, because we're in this current situation, we can't avoid it, the pandemic. How is it for you?
I'm in a balancing act, between trying to stay grounded and see a healthy perspective, and on the other side, losing my sanity.
A lot of people are maybe putting pressing a reset button on their lives a little bit. Yeah. Their priorities are changing, or maybe their priorities are changing on their personal lives against the professional. Maybe having a different balance. I think it's quite complicated for many people. Certainly in our industry, in the industry of entertainment, in live entertainment. We're certainly under the gun at the moment, right?
Certainly. It's like the carpet has been pulled from under us.
Yeah.
And what happens when that happens? When we need to react, because when the carpet is pulled, we lose our. You said it a moment ago. We lose our balance.
Yeah.
So we're now put in a situation where we have to reestablish the balance. Whatever that means for you. So each person has to sort of figure out what that is. And we have never had this before. I'm hoping that later in retrospect, this was actually some kind of gift for many artists who were able to use the time to perhaps spend more time with their children, and work on some new material. And later, we're going to go through this.
Do you think? Have you worked on new material?
Yeah, I have worked on new material.
Yeah, I've always worked in the live entertainment business. You know, I've got a deadline. I've got an opening night. I've got a press night or something like that. And now it's different because there's no clear press night. There's no clear deadline. And sometimes I think that we like the pressure of being ready on time, being perfect, having all the tests done and everything. But then at the moment, we don't know, we haven't got a clear picture of where we're going to be in 1 month, 2 months, 6 months, a year. And I wonder how creative can you be when you don't know when you're going to be back, let's say, in the full swing.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But do you feel pressured? Can you generate that pressure to achieve your creation that you're thinking about?
Sometimes.
No.
Sometimes, not all the time. You know, sometimes I'm feeling despair in the last months on a level I never felt before. We say in show business we're in the shit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay to be there for a while. I think a lot of it has to do with what kind of person how you're built, how you're put together, how you can tolerate this kind of blackness, the hole. You know, we're all falling down the rabbit hole, and it puts us in touch with our sense of mental survival.
Do you feel better because you've had quite a few number of years behind you and the experience that you're a celebrity? People will, when they want to start back up again, they're going to look to Peter Shubb because he's an established artist. Do you feel better about that? What do you say? What do you think about the 20-year-olds that are just dreaming about a life in what we've been lucky enough to enjoy?
Yeah, I think it's not easy for them. I don't know if people are going to look at me for setting an example. I don't know. I think it's difficult for 20-year-olds, no matter what's going on the planet.
Yeah, but it's an exciting time. I remember when I was 20, and I had no internet, no cell phone.
When were you 20?
I would have been 20 in 82.
Mm.
Yeah. Long time ago.
Wow.
But I remember...
you look very good for an old man.
I remember, not when I was 20, but I started sort of professionally performing 22, 23. And I remember...
That's kind of late.
Yeah, but it was based on sort of an athletic career first. But I was... But I remember desperately trying to get a contact of somebody in America. And it came from another artist with a little black book with a telephone number, right? Call this guy or this address, because we were writing letters, sending a great big VHS tape. That, there was no sort of technology in those days. And I remember it was as hard as hell to get other jobs. But having said that, people would say, you can try in Germany, you can try in Italy. There's something going on in the States or something. Now, the world is massive now. We send one WhatsApp message and it's in Australia, half a second later.
Yeah.
So
we're like a lot. The world is big, but it's we're separated, but we're so connected if we want to be through the internet, through the technology.
Well, I think the pandemic, my personal opinion is the pandemic is maybe the first pandemic sort of controlled by social media. And yes, we've had, this is very serious, and I take it very seriously, whether it's for myself or my family or for the other artists that we're trying to protect. But a lot of people don't know what's going on because there's so much information which contradicts each other, and then I'm a little confused. And when you're looking out for jobs or something, we're also looking for safe countries, safe zones. Yeah, Italy, they've got it under control. Maybe I can think of working there or something. Some other countries, they're in the red zone or no travel restrictions. Visas are difficult to get. It's a scary time for everybody.
It sounds like the game we play as children, hide and seek.
Yeah.
So now you can go globally to hide from this pandemic. You hear about one section opening up, or maybe we can go there and get work.
Yeah.
As you did before there was a pandemic, you wanted to come to America. You found out that's the place. I like this story that you just said, that it was just by coincidence that there was a note written down or something and some tape, and hearing you say that, it sounds like, just...
It had to be a good friend to give you the number. If it wasn't friends, you'd be like, sorry, I can't tell you. Everyone was protective about their little black book of numbers.
Yeah, you had no idea then that you were going to become as successful as you were.
No, but you're the same. You're how many kilometers were... 6,000-7,000 kilometers from your hometown?
Yeah.
Pennsylvania, yeah. Right?
Uh-huh.
But... I mean, we're a similar age. You had a similar challenge. You studied actor, sociology.
Well, I studied sociology, and I switched, and I never looked back. I just kept going, similar to you. So I think if there's a message, what I'm hearing now, if we want to give it to 20-year-olds, it is that you have to. It doesn't matter what you do, but you just have to believe in yourself. No matter what the odds are against you making it, you have to believe in something. You have to find what is your passion and go in that direction. And now, even more so because of this pandemic, it's sort of putting this drip on us, this idea that, well, life as we knew it is over, we have to rediscover ourselves, we have to find a new way, that should not overwhelm anybody. And so we have to believe that life somehow, in a magical way, will take care of us. Yes, cool. We have to trust life. It's not easy right now, but we have to hold on to hope that things will get better.
But when you were in the States, did you have a master plan, a strategy of what this is what I want to do, or did you just follow your success or your passion?
I knew what I didn't want to do. I wasn't sure exactly the path. I knew I didn't want to work at a job 9 to 5 with that kind of defining idea of being stuck in the same kind of job for many years. I wanted to have an adventure. I really wanted to have an adventure.
You were like that as a little boy. You like adventure?
Yeah, very much.
Danger?
Yeah. I like the unknown. I like facing my fear. I do that a lot. And leaving America to go to Europe I was 21 years old, and I didn't have a master plan.
So when you left the States at 21,
yeah,
where did you come to, and why?
I went to Brussels because I had a friend. She lived there, and that was, she picked me up at the airport and took me into her home for a few days, and from there I went to 12 different countries in 3 months, and I was performing on the street. I just had a backpack and a few tricks, cool. And I could juggle a little bit. And it was beautiful. It was the right time. I don't know if people could.
Was
do that
the best time of your life? Maybe
that, because there you know was no... they say that there's 5 or 6 highlights in your life, and that was definitely one of the highlights. The freedom to.
But why wouldn't you do that in America? Why wouldn't you do that in New York? You're born in New York. Why wouldn't you be a street artist?
Yeah, it was too fast. The New York, California maybe, but I wasn't familiar with that side of the country. So I knew New York and Philadelphia and Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. And these cities, they didn't have gemütlich, they didn't have the street scene. That's my phone.
It's fine.
It's technology talking to technology, you when you're least expected. You never know what life's going to throw you. And I lean towards Europe because I read in books, we didn't have the internet then, I read in the books that street performing is part of the culture and part of the history of Europe, and that was very exciting to me. Plus I was becoming more and more interested in pantomime, and I did some research in the library to find a good clown in
my
school.
You might have to explain to some people what a library is, because I remember I had my library card.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was in trouble if I didn't take the book. I was in trouble if I didn't take the book back.
Yeah, you would get penalized.
Fine, yeah, yeah.
So I did this research, and I discovered that the best schools for clowning and pantomime were influenced by three people, all in Paris, in the 80s, or in the 20th century. And these people were Marcel Marceau.
Of course.
Everyone knows him. Jacques Lecoq and Etienne Ducroux. So I thought, well, why don't I just go for the horse's
and
mouth?
You'd read about these guys back in the States.
Yeah, I read about them, and I heard from other performers, and some of the best schools were in California for theater, for circus arts and mime and experimental theater. And when I spoke to them, I researched their background, and I asked them where did they learn this, and some of them had learned it in Paris.
That's why you studied in Paris.
And then I discovered such a freedom, a sense of freedom when I realized I can perform on the street. I'm 20 years old. I can gather an audience and do some tricks and some jokes. They laugh. They're united in laughter. They feel good together. They like me. No, they love me. And afterwards, I say goodbye. Before you go, put something in a hat.
Right.
And they put something in a hat, and it was more money than I was in. I was a student of the university, And my job was being a tour guide, and I was making like $6 an hour. And I did a 20-minute show, and I made like $30. I couldn't. So it gave me. I didn't have to work, or I could work when I wanted to.
Yeah.
Which is not really. That's not the way society runs. You know.
Absolutely not.
We're not supposed to work like that.
Yeah.
It's not supposed to function like that.
I think even really structured, regimented people, they're sort of jealous of your free spirit, that you leave home, leave your comfort zone, let's say,
yeah.
and then you move to Europe, which in those days, I remember being living in England. When I came to France, I came to truly a different country, different culture.
Yeah.
Now it's all mixing in a little bit. You see the same shops in every shopping center. It's lost that sort of mystique and that sort of sex appeal.
Yeah, maybe it'll change. Maybe because of Corona, society is going to be mixed up, and you know the puzzle is going to be rearranged, and cities will be more.
They have their identity again.
Yeah.
That would be a nice thought, though.
Yeah.
Because you can be, with respect to all those cities, Paris is, as I told you, I know well. And they still have a lot of street performers.
I used to play in front of the Centre Pompidou. In front of the Centre Pompidou before they had behind. The Centre Pompidou was in front of me and behind were the shops.
Right.
Now when you look at the shops, there's a Starbucks, there's a McDonald's. It's sad, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I really enjoyed, you know, I remember a long time ago that my mother knew somebody American who was in some Air Force base or something,
yeah.
And he could get me a baseball glove. Now you can buy them in every store.
Yeah.
But I remember getting something from a different country, which was a different culture. Loved it. You know, it was like this thing. Now that's lost its charm.
Yes, yes. Mm. It becomes the same everywhere. Now we have to discover different planets. That's the future. I mean, we can't just stay on Earth forever. So people will say, "Where'd you get that? Oh, I got this on Jupiter, and this is from Mars." And that's the future.
Not in our lifetime, Peter.
No, but it's fun to dream, isn't it? It's fun to dream ahead.
Well, I think I said to you today, your world. I think your world. I have the deepest respect for your world because you come in cold. And you have to entertain them. You have to catch them. If I come from more of an athletic...
You mean in the theater?
Or on the street.
Or in the street.
Circus, street, you have to catch them. Because if you're not entertaining them on the street, I imagine they just walk by and say, "Oh, that's cool." But they just keep... you haven't caught them.
It's a good
training. You're not going to get your dollar or your franc in those days.
Yeah.
And I just think in an athletic world and even in the artistic world, someone does a handstand and people are, and they're pulled to it because it's a physical ability. And the people, the artist, myself, when I was more athletic or a handstand or an aerial trapeze, they can zone out a little bit from the public. Yes, of course, we don't like to, but if there's nobody watching, we just do our act. You can't. House rehearsals for you when there's no audience.
Well, then what is it? If you can space out a bit, what is it that the audience is tuning into?
No, I'm just saying that if I have no audience, I always tried to give 100% when I was rehearsing, pretending that I can see. But if you are on the street, you have to perform for money. If you don't do great, you're not going to get any money. And I think it must be one of the hardest professions because you're cold.
It's true.
People are cold.
I live in Hanover in a huge house, 15 rooms, and sometimes I wonder how many people I had to make laugh. How many laughters did I need to pay for this house? Millions.
Millions. Yeah. Millions. But you studied in. But then you studied in Paris, right?
Yeah, I studied in Paris, but it's. I just want to go back a minute to what you said. How a comedian has to
engage.
That's a good word. To engage.
I shouldn't have given
to connect,
you a word because
connect,
your words are
connect,
better.
Connect. Engage. Connect.
Yep.
No, it's a good word. An acrobat. He is maybe dependent more on his technique. We're applauding mm-hmm. and And we're in awe of how he can do his technical feats, these technical tricks. And it's technique.
Yeah.
But the comedian's also using technique. I think it's the technique of acting. You have to be, I think a good clown first has to be, I'm afraid now many clowns are going to write to me and say, no, I don't agree. But this is my opinion, is that a good clown has to be a good actor.
Yeah.
So it's the technique of acting.
Well, I'm going to jump ahead to something, something that I read you said. If you don't mind me quoting your words, because when I read it, you said that your performance is a lie on stage. You said, the only thing that matters is they accept my lie. That is acting, right?
That's acting.
That's acting.
Yeah, because I think a good, on stage, I'm more interested in a good liar, a person who can lie, but we have the fun of his lie, the pleasure, the joy, than the person who tells the truth, but is completely boring.
Yeah.
So in that way, theater is a lie. Theater is really about, but the honesty, it also has an honest part, the part of that. Of finding the game.
Yeah.
Finding the game between me and the audience.
Yeah.
And there's a game inherent. There's a game in every moment if you have the eyes to see it.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to find this game. And then somehow you have to underline it so that the audience understands, okay, it's a game. I understand the rules of the game. Because if I understand the rules of the game that I'm playing, but they don't, I'm dead.
Mm-hmm.
So and that's.
Did you die a few times on the street? Did you die a few?
I have died on the street. I have died on stage. I've died in circuses, but I keep coming back because I love it. And no comedian, it's impossible to be a clown without failing. Just read the other day that it's impossible. Someone said Keith Johnston, who's one of the founding fathers of modern improv theater, Keith Johnston said that you can't learn anything without failing.
Yeah.
If you think about it, it's true. When we're a little kid, when we're a baby, and we want to learn to walk, how many times have we stood up and fell over? That's failing, and that's part of learning. You can't learn anything without failing. So to do comedy, you have to be willing to take the risk. You have to be willing to step into the void and feel the room and try to win them on your side, that they like you, that they love you,
mm-hmm.
and that they're in your world. You have to bring them into your world of comedy. In my opinion, a comedian or a clown, the goal, in my opinion, the goal is to get people to laugh.
Are you a comedian or a clown? Or an actor?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
I just do my thing, and I let the press put me into a box. You know, we love to put people in boxes. I mean, mm-hmm. That's how we're wired. That's how we exist. Is it safe? Is it dangerous? Do I have to run away? Can I stay here? He's that. She's that. That's a teacher. That's my father. He's a comedian. So I don't know. It's a mixture. I think when I'm in the circus, people have to understand what's going on here and what are they watching. So if I'm in the circus and I'm making people laugh, he's a clown. But if I'm in the theater and I'm performing the same kind of show, but my clothes are a little bit different, he's a comedian, like Mr. Bean.
Yeah.
And some people would say Mr. Bean's a clown, and some would say he's a physical comedian.
Who, apart from Marcel Marceau, the mime, who do you hold, who inspired you? Or is it mainly the pantomime guys? Or were there celebrity performers that we would know?
Know this one. He was my father. He was the clown of my family. He inspired me. He was a funny guy.
What was he, what was, but he wasn't in the entertainment world.
Mm-mm. No, he was selling real estate in Florida, and he was okay in what he did, but he was funny. He was always in a good mood. Mm-hmm. I think that's important. I learned from him that the importance to sell your joy and hide your pain. That's what a clown's job
but
is.
You've got to feel pain as well, though, no?
Yeah, you can feel pain, but if you play pain with pain, it doesn't really work. People will feel sorry for you.
I don't want to offend you at
all.
I
know where you're going with this. You're going to talk about my son.
No, I'm not. Mm. No, what I was going to say is that that for me, from where I've seen you perform, I've seen you perform live, and I've seen you on video, and I've heard about you.
I'm better on video.
I take you as a really thoughtful comedian, performer. Whether you're an actor or whether you're a comedian, I don't see you as a clown, but maybe I rationalize that word something different to yourself. But I think that you're really deep and you're really thoughtful and emotional about that.
That's interesting.
Quite intelligent, actually. I think that I remember my family said, "When are you going to get a normal job? You know, a real job?" Because your father was in real estate; he was selling houses.
And my brother was a lawyer.
He had a real job.
Yeah.
And did they think that you never worked your life?
Yeah, they were mad. They were disappointed in my mother. My father, not so much. My father was happy that I found something that I was passionate about. And my mother was worried about the image I was playing on the street in the beginning. And she thought that was embarrassing for her. Mm. It really hurt me. I wanted her to love what I'm doing. And She couldn't accept it. No, you went to school, Peter. You have to follow this. We spent a lot of money on your education. Now you're a beggar. You're begging for money. I said, "Mom, no, you don't understand. I'm an artist. And I'm putting my hat out there because I deserve to be paid. I'm being rewarded. The people want to give me money.
Did your family ever get that?
They got it when they came to Germany and they saw me performing in Circus Roncalli and the Then my mom cried,
right.
And she was really touched. And that happened because Bernard Paul gave me a chance to perform.
Famous clown himself, but different, completely different to yourself.
Yes, completely different. And he had the vision, thank God, that there could be other clowns in his circus which are a contrast or different than he is.
No, I think not only was he a good performer, but he had a good vision for Roncalli. I think it's a great product. It's a great show. Really artistic. And he obviously appreciates people that are super talented, even though that maybe you weren't doing the same as that he did. But to have you in his company, I think, he realized, because he's a very thoughtful clown as well, and obviously realized your talent to bring something that maybe he couldn't.
Yeah, that was okay for him. Style. Yeah. He had a good eye for what works in his under his tent.
When when I've looked at lots of different things you've done, I wrote down one really really weird question for you.
Oh, bring
which,
it on!
I hope that you will understand because I said from the way that I see you perform, I think it's very emotional what you're doing, and you're trying to go much deeper than simply pie in the face. You know, much, much more intelligent, much more clever. And I wrote down this thing. I said, Peter, I wrote it down. I said, Peter, are you happy to live your life in color, or would you prefer to live your life in black and white? That's what I get from watching you. I think it's that, you know, maybe it's a little Chaplin-esque, you know, if Chaplin-esque is a word, but that you are sort of studying the art of, or you're testing the art of human
connection.
Human connection, and it's not It's not super colorful. It's not, you're not coming out with the big, the traditional circus red nose and everything. You're very sort of gray. And it's very intriguing. And I think there's a huge amount to this man than just simply him coming out and performing. I think there's something very deep that brings you onto stage, and it's taken a lot more thought than a circus clown who will, you know, give me one clap or two or three, and then you know what I mean? How to sort of
I do that too. I do that.
Yeah, but I see that yours is much deeper.
Why? Why do you see that? Because the imagination is a wonderful artist, and the imagination of you is painting me in that light, and I'm curious why.
I can't really say. You know, it's one of those things that I just took away from seeing a lot of things that you do, and I just think that he's much deeper. He doesn't need color. He doesn't need an exploding firework or a big circus clown effect. He's deeper, and the tiniest little motion, the tiniest, like you say,
that movement.
Movement. This tiniest little subtle, very subtle, which some people could miss. Because if they're not really, because I think when I watch you, I have to focus. I have to really come down. You make me focus. You've sucked me in. But I feel like I just have to sit and think about what you're doing. Whereas a circus clown, with all respect to circus clowns, they're great and some of the funniest performances I've ever seen. Fantastic. But you're different.
Yes.
And you bring something deeper where a circus clown, I'm not.
We don't need to compare. We don't have to say I bring something deeper. We could say I bring something deep.
I certainly don't want to disrespect because we're in a wonderful business and we need all these different types of talents into it because it makes it all. That's why, because tomorrow we could be talking about a new creation and how did somebody come up with that? You know, where did that come from? And it just comes
I hope that happens soon so I can get more work.
Yeah. When you're not working, I mean, we've been through the...
Before we go into that, I like this color in black and white.
Yeah, I don't know why I wrote it. I've got it written down there. I can't see it now. I haven't got my glasses on. But it just brought me into you, and it sort of took away...
That's interesting.
...away the sort of bright, shiny lights of anything, and I could watch you in black and white. And I honestly, I can't really explain how I feel, but I felt it when I was watching you, because I thought he's bringing me into something that it's very subtle. I've got to concentrate on this. It's there isn't going to be a huge thing. You know, some things that you do are bigger, but you're very subtle and you're much more intelligent. You're playing with people's attention and emotion. I just think you bring me into that. I can't really say, but you tell me. You are a fantastic artist,
well,
which studies
I'll
people more so than my than I.
What? What's the last part?
You've studied the guest, the audience, more than me.
Yes.
I think.
That's possible. But when I hear you speak, when I'm listening to you talking about the color and the black and white, that
I don't want to make a big thing of this.
I do, because it's interesting. I think of it in another way. I think of it metaphorically, how theater and circus has impacted my life. And I could use the black and white and color by saying that my whole life as a child was not fantastic. I was pretty introverted and shy. And I did not excel at any sports until I was in my late teens, and then I was on the tennis team of the university, and then I was rowing. But most of my life, it was pretty black and white. And what happened was I discovered theater, or theater and circus discovered me, and then it was a fireworks of color. There was a lot of color in my life, especially stepping into the Cirque du Dama festival and winning. I never won anything in my life. And then I went
on. Was that your first major trophy?
Yeah, got the silver medal. And then some years later, I won the silver clown at Monte Carlo. And it was so colorful. There were colors.
Fantastic.
Yes.
The two most famous, certainly Monte Carlo as being the number one blue ribbon event.
And they asked me to come back this year, but Corona says, wait a little bit. I'm going to Kenya. I go to Circus Kenya next year.
Really?
Yeah. I was supposed to be there this year.
A 10-month tour around?
No, I'm only doing a few months.
Right.
I share it with two other fantastic Swiss clowns.
Yeah.
Ursus und Nadeshkin. I don't know if you know them. You could look them up on YouTube.
I know of them.
They're really great. So I share the season with them.
Do you see any difference between the sort of... Because I've seen a lot of circuses and a lot of shows in Switzerland. Is there any difference in their humor, you think?
The difference what?
Between German and Swiss humor. I've seen a lot of shows. They seem to be a lot, maybe... I see some shocking things in Switzerland.
Do you?
That I think, brave things. You know, there can be quite, let's say, sexual connotations, or it can be nudity or something like that.
So outrageous.
And the Swiss, outrageous. And the people are like, oh! But they love it.
Yeah.
And I just think, I couldn't do that here where I am. I would have too many complaint letters, you know, albeit in the name of artistry. But in Switzerland, it's funny because I have this sort of preconceived thought of the Swiss being quite reserved, and yet it's actually the opposite. Everything goes in Switzerland.
Yeah, I guess maybe in places where you have more repression, there's more a need for this explosion of color.
Please don't think I didn't mean to offend you at all. It's just that I thought... I know you're a thoughtful person. I know you're.
So are you. I'm not offended. I love this idea, this metaphor of color and black and white and what it can stand for. So my childhood was this black and white, sort of boring life, and then I discovered theater, and that's when I started to see colors.
So
and the Swiss are, by the way, they're really creative, and they have some of the best clowns.
Yeah.
They have the clown. Pick, I don't know if you know him. He was in Roncalli with me for years. He's brilliant. And Dimitri.
Yeah, I know. Yes, of course.
And Mumenschanz.
Fantastic.
They are wonderful.
So when you were in Paris then, and then you're working on the street, you're doing well. How did you actually get a real job?
Yeah.
Being engaged into either a theater or a circus.
Well, during the summer times, in order to live in Paris, because it was expensive and my parents didn't give me any financial help, I had to make all the money myself. So during the summertime, I would travel around Europe and play at festivals. I would be invited to festivals, and I would earn enough money to go to Paris and survive most of the time. But I also, in addition to this money that I saved in the summertime, I was lucky to have met the production manager for the play Amadeus, which was in Paris, and that was directed by Roman Polanski. And I auditioned and I got the job. So I worked with Roman Polanski every day for 10 months, and I was 23, and that was great.
And that was your first major job.
Yeah, that was my first major job. And then when that was finished, I was working in different cabarets in Paris. There's many caves. I worked at the Caveau de la Bolée. I went to Crazy Horse, and what's his name? Bernard.
He's not there. He's not known anymore.
But he said he loved what I'm doing. But he said, I don't. The one reason I won't take you is you're putting your suitcase on the floor. And that says to me, you're a street artist. I could probably find you at the Centre Pompidou. And in this establishment, we don't put props on the floor. So come back with a table.
Did you go back with a table?
No, I just thought, fuck you. But I wish I had gone back with a table to work at the at the Monte Carlo, no, at the Crazy Horse. Yeah, that would have been wonderful, I'm sure. But I had, other things happened, Roncalli happened, and Cirque du Soleil invited me. But I would, if I could do it over again in Paris, I would love to work at the Lido, like you did. Mm-hmm. How many years did you work there? 10 years?
13.
Wow.
Yeah.
I would have liked that. I'm doing that in my next life.
I started maybe at the end of their good times.
At the end of the good times.
Yeah, it became more and more. I would say when I got there, apart from the French political difficulties at the time with the strikes and stuff like that, that the Lido was most probably the most successful cabaret in Paris at that time, and the Moulin Rouge was suffering.
Yeah,
Crazy Horse was doing well, but Crazy Horse is a different concept. But they were doing well, and then the movie came out, the Moulin Rouge, and I think it just changed completely upside down. It put the Moulin Rouge on, although it should have been already, because it's probably double the age of the Lido.
Yeah, such and a history.
Put it on the map, yeah. Totally, with yeah. Every international person. So the movie has such success that every international guest wanted to come in and see the Moulin Rouge, yeah. Thinking they're going to see Nicole Kidman, but they're not disappointed because it's a beautiful theater. Fantastic theater.
Yes.
Are there a lot of places that you regret, like maybe the Lido or the Moulin or
yeah.
Are there any things? Oh,
this place.
Have done that.
Here, where we are.
Europa Park. We've got to put. Yeah. I can see in the future we're going to put that right.
Yeah, Europa Park would be a great place for me to play.
Have you been here before?
No, it's my first time. It's my first day here, because of my manager Dorothy Koss.
Yeah.
She's always trying to bring me here. But I was always too busy. It was never the right moment to do that. And now I regret that I didn't bring my children here.
Right.
But that's another story. I mean, not only did I not bring them here, I didn't bring them to bed enough. I was too often on the road. But, you know, someone has to pay the bills.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, as you grow older in years, will you regret that? Being so successful?
Not so much.
You've got the house of 15 rooms.
Yeah.
Would you have preferred a house of 10 rooms and maybe more time with the kids at their growing up years?
Yeah, I think that's the only regret.
Because you're a great tennis player. Did you play tennis with your kids?
Yeah, for a little while. We don't anymore. I hurt my knee, won't let me run. And the children are doing their own sports. They do hockey a lot, basketball. Nobody wants to play tennis. I can't believe it. Tennis was such an important part of my young teenage life.
It's rubbish when the kids don't follow your passion, right?
Yeah, yes. Mm. How can you not do tennis? And we live across the street from a tennis club.
I mean, yeah. You know what? I mean, this is about Peter Shubb. This is not about me. But I remember taking my daughter to her first lesson. And it was on the clay courts, you know, the French, like they play in the French Open, the sand.
Yeah.
And the coach said, oh, we're just going to clean the court. First lesson was cleaning the court, because you have to pull out this big mat to clean the court.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know this. Okay. And my daughter, all she wanted to do was pick the racket up and swing it. That's all she wanted to do. But the teacher said, let's teach them discipline first. So the last 20 minutes, they picked the racket up and hit the ball a little bit. But my daughter was totally demotivated. And I went up to the coach and I said, you've changed her completely, because you, the coach, the teacher, is so important. That has to, yes. If you don't encourage and just build the first of all, they should be having fun. At 5 years old, it should be just simply fun. And if the balls go all over the place and if the court's a bit dirty, yes. So what? Let them love it first.
What you just said is very important. They have to have fun if they want to learn to play tennis. But that's the ingredient. That's the secret to learning everything for children.
Right.
In fact, children of all ages, even children our age, you have to have fun to learn something.
Exactly. It's not work. It's not work when we're having fun, right?
Yes. That's what we're selling here. That's what we're... come to this world and have fun with us. Have fun with, find the fun of being alive.
Yeah, I mean, we at Europa Park definitely want the people to have a break away from the pressures of life, come into our world of not fantasy, we're real world, but and give them a great day, shared experience. We encourage, we want the families to be spending time together, and making memories. Yeah. I do like to believe that people walk out of here with memories that they will retain for many, many years. About maybe the father just taking hold of the daughter for a roller coaster or something like that.
Or a water balloon fight. We saw that today. We saw families having so much fun together.
Yeah.
It's great. I love walking around here and seeing the joy in people's faces.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm used to seeing that in circuses or in the theaters. I haven't been to something like this in a long time. It's very nice. You're lucky you work in a place like this.
And you said to me
an hour before the interview that your boss, Michael, is always, even though it's run so well, he's a visionary. He's always thinking of the future.
And absolutely.
When I heard you say it, I thought, am I a visionary? You'd like that about him. And I was asking myself, do I have that quality as well? I think it's important as an artist to have that. Because if you always stay the same, people are going to notice that, and you get more credit if you are developing, which is funny for me to say that because I've done pretty much the same act for so many years, but it grows. It's never really the same. Some things I'm still doing that I did when I was born, and things that I'm getting tired of I throw out.
Totally what you want to do, or do you know this is successful, this works with the audience? I'm not really loving doing it anymore, but it works, so I have to do it.
It's a compromise. You know, there are some things that I love doing, and I think this is going to work, and it doesn't work at all.
Mm. And so you stay with it.
I rework it until it works, or I rework it until I realize For some reason, it's not going to find a level that it's not going to work. People are not going to like it, so I have to throw it out.
Right. You know, one of the things I say about that, I think that you're a deeper, more thoughtful person, because I think in the artistic, the acrobatic, the sportive world, that some of the best teachers in the world were tennis or something. They weren't necessarily very good themselves. Not international level or world level or something like that. And there are special people. And I think you're one of those special people in the clowning or controlling other people's emotions, because you're touching the people. And you're, like we've said, engaging. And you're doing your own masterclass. And you're teaching.
Yeah, I'm teaching people to do that.
So that proves me right.
Well, I'm just trying to have a lot of fun in my life and a lot of different experiences, similar to you. I don't know you very long, but I feel like we could be really good friends.
Yeah, I believe so.
We're on the same frequency.
Yeah.
And so teaching has become very important to me because it's so much fun.
Yeah.
When I'm teaching someone and they're discovering something about themselves, again, it's like going from black and white to colors. Mm-hmm. And it empowers me, and empowers me in such a positive sense to be able to help others to... I'm helping others to have more fun being who they are on stage.
Are you opening themselves up, or are you teaching them how to detect?
Well, I'm opening up some things and closing other things, because it's hard to change a habit of a lifetime. So if people are doing things for a real long time, we all form shadow habits, things that we don't see but other people see. So right. My specialty is to see these things that I think, and it's just my opinion, but you have to trust me, I think some of these habits are unnecessary. And it's hard to get rid of them, but so we work on them. Or we work on, we look at what's beautiful about you. Or we look at when you're on stage, when you're having a sense of freedom, that's when you're most beautiful. When you're free and you're not worried and you let go of the self-consciousness.
Are you, when you
then,
teach,
then you're beautiful. And that's, and that's what we want to bring out. We want to bring this out to share it with an audience.
When you teach,
yeah,
and you're really working one-on-one with somebody,
yeah,
is your concentration on them or is it on how you feel?
Yeah, it's on all these things. I mean, you can isolate them,
yeah,
or but you need to work with the whole spectrum of what's happening. When I'm watching you, I'm trying to understand who you are, mm-hmm, and what you want to express, and trying to feel what's going on in me, and the worst thing I could do is to put my brand on you.
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Because it wouldn't be me, and I couldn't carry it off.
Yeah. Yeah, so...
So the people you're working with don't necessarily have your style.
No, but they often come to me because they like my style.
Right.
And they think, oh, I want to be like him.
Right.
Until they realize or I help them to realize that it doesn't work that way. You have to discover what is beautiful about you, or what's funny about you, and what's joyful and silly and ridiculous, and sell that.
And if I'm guessing right, you learned by that as well.
Well, I learned that from experience, but I also learned from a master of theater, and I want to say his name now because
influence. I think you can call yourself a master of theater, right?
Yeah, but the masters need masters too, and my master, one of my masters, was Philippe Gollier, and he is a master of the ridiculous and of the subtle and of the eccentric. He's a master of finding what works for you. He's a master of showing you, and helping you to celebrate that.
When you're on stage and you're performing,
yeah.
Do you ever? What are you like when you're on stage? Are you? Do you come into Peter Shubb the performer?
Yeah.
And there's no distraction outside of that tunnel vision, or are you? Do you have the main? Do you have the wherewithal? You, as an English speaker, you'll understand what I mean. The wherewithal to be able to say, Gollier would have loved that. Do you know what I mean? Can you think about something like that? Or when you're on stage, you are performing and you're in your zone and you don't necessarily come out of it.
Yeah, I'm in my zone. And maybe my teachers are there too, but on an unconscious level at this point. It's you learn it for many years, and then this technique of acting, and then you throw it away. You don't think about it anymore, but it's in here. It's in me.
So when I'm on stage, do you study yourself a lot, your performance?
I'm studying the moment. I study that a lot. I go into the performance. I have basic ideas. I know that I'm going to do the invisible dog, and I'm going to do this, like in a Spielplatz, mm-hmm, in a playground. I have different stations I'm going to go to. So I'll do first, I'll be here.
You don't alter from it?
And I
spontaneously.
I do. I'm spontaneous. Yeah. But I have fixed places that I go to. But between this fixed place and this fixed place, there's this empty space, and there I can improvise. And so I have to be really in the zone with the audience, with every audience.
Do you before you go out,
yeah,
to perform, you're on stage, are you looking at the audience? Do you look at the audience trying to get a feeling of...
Yeah, I'm walking through the audience. They don't recognize me. Right. And I try to feel, what is the energy here? What's the energy? What do they want from me? It makes me so nervous, this fucking job.
No, but I totally relate because, an acrobat will come out and say, well, I'm just going to I'm going to go bomb across the stage. I'm going to do my double back flip, nail it perfectly. The people will start applauding. But you just walk out there. The people will not, well, maybe now because you have 40 years of experience behind you and that you're well known. But this is what I go back to how we started this, that you come out to a cold audience that, yes, you've had maybe an acrobat or somebody in front of you, but you come out and they're going to like, what's this dude going to do?
Yes.
How's he going to get me? I mean, does that must make you a little, I mean, I don't want to put something in your mind.
Say it.
But does that make you a little nervous? Like, again, I've got to go out, start from zero.
Yes. Every time it makes me so nervous. It makes me so nervous. But I think that's why we do it. Yeah. I think that's why as a comedian we do that. It's like coming here and going on the
big roller coaster.
Roller coaster.
Yep.
Why the hell would you do that? We do that to have fun with our fear.
Yeah.
We go there to face our fear.
Yeah.
We go there, we're not sure, we pay the money, we get on, and we go click, 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 click. We start looking, click, click,
getting
click.
Getting higher, getting
and
higher.
Thinking, why am I doing this? And getting mm-hmm. higher. And then you go over the top, oh my God, whoa! And it's so much fun. And what do? We get off and go on again.
That's right.
So before the show, I get really nervous.
Yeah.
And I like this kind of nervousness.
You like it? It's not to the point where I'm not ready. I can't go out there right now. That doesn't happen.
Yeah, sometimes, because my crazy manager... she pushes me in Cologne in a theater with the Huna. The Huna is a rock and roll group from Cologne area, and I had to play there for 15,000 people. And I said, "Don't do this to me, Dorothy." And she said, "You'll do okay." I said, "I'm going to dig my grave. I'm going to die here." And I killed. I did really well. So I can play any 15, space.
15,000 people. They're 100 meters from you. More.
They're so far away. I mean, when I'm doing movements like this or like this, they need binoculars to see, but they have big screens.
Right.
So that saved me. But I love to play in all these different spaces. Or I went to a circus, what's her circus? Flick Flack.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought
I've
I would...
I've seen you in Flick Flack.
Really?
Mm-hmm. In...
I saw you too. I think you were doing this all the time. Sometimes you're doing that.
No, actually, I watched you... I can't remember, but we had a massive heat wave. You were in the Flick Flack Extreme,
mm-hmm.
and you were in, I can't remember the city, not too far from here. You're right in the middle of the city,
yeah.
And it was about 1,000 degrees inside the tent.
More.
Yeah, and the big black extreme tent they had, the really long one.
Right, right. With all the motorcycles.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Crazy and the guys coming down, the aerial straps into the water on fire
yeah.
and stuff like
yeah.
that. And I saw
Flick
you.
Flack's
that was
crazy.
A weird. That was a weird tent, actually, because the Tribune was like 200 meters long,
yeah.
or something.
And you remember all the details. That's great.
Well, I remember what I took from it, and I just thought, this is a weird thing, because it was built for the extreme,
yeah.
because of all the major.
And it's so unfamiliar, right? You go into a tent and you yep. see this, and they. The genius is there, these guys who put the show together, they were playing with space. They were playing, they yeah. changed the architecture. And the architecture has an effect on how we feel, even
yeah.
before an artist steps on the stage.
Oh, it's totally, I mean, Flick Flack, I love Flick Flack for what they present.
Well, I was afraid of Flick Flack. I said, I'm not doing this. And my manager said, you're doing it, you have to have this experience. Even if you flop, even if you're into shit, even if you die, you'll learn something from this, and you'll take
yeah.
that. I said, Dorothy, I don't want to die. I'm having too much success. I don't need it. She said, you do. It'll humble you. It'll bring you back to your roots. So I agreed, and I did it. And the first night, I got a standing ovation. So
but,
I can play all spaces. I can play even in an elevator. If I'm stuck in an elevator for a few minutes, and there's a little kid there, I'll do some... You know, some tricks.
Yeah.
I just love this connection. I don't have to say anything. It's just using the body or finding the fun with your body to connect with people. It's a beautiful experience.
That's where it comes from, though. It's not.
It comes from wanting to connect. It comes from. Well, it comes from needing, but don't tell anybody this. This is the secret between you and me.
No, it won't.
It comes from wanting love. You know, it's wanting to be accepted and really to be accepted by everybody. More than to be accepted, to be loved. You know, maybe I didn't get enough love when I was a kid.
But when you've got a standing ovation, you've got 15,000 people going crazy for you, you can't go home to sleep, right?
Because I've been in therapy for years. I've been in therapy for years, and my therapist said, Peter, you have to learn. You have to learn that they're loving you in that moment. Because she said that my problem is I can't take the love. I can't believe that I deserve this. But I don't know. I have trouble with it. But when people are giving me so much applause, it is an adrenaline rush. And it's beautiful and it's sad because when 3,000 people are giving you so much love, and then the show's over, they go home, and they go home to their family. And often, where I receive this applause, I'm not home. I'm on the road somewhere, and it's for me, it's existential loneliness.
But do you take pleasure from the pleasure that you are giving other people? Because you're giving them lasting. Because they're going home. When on the way home, they're still thinking, and they're all sitting in the car, you know. And because what about when that guy did that? You know, loved that. You know, and loved that performer. Okay, loved the motorbike flying over my head or something like that. But you know, getting a motorbike flying over your head is a wow factor. But you getting a standing ovation from just you standing on stage, no firework, no color, I mean, you've created something amazing.
Yeah, that's a great rush.
Which you can't go home and just come. It must take you longer to come down from that, because you achieved your whole.
Yeah, it's hard to come down. Years. It's like an astronaut.
Right. But 40 years of experience has given you the possibility to make people feel something.
Yeah, that's great. It's a process. Didn't happen right away. I started out with you know, Penn and Teller. They're magicians.
Of course, yeah.
So they were one of the reasons I started to do this, because we were living in the same city in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And they were performing on the weekends, and I saw them the first time, and I was mesmerized. I was completely blown away, and I went over to them.
Were they famous at this point?
No, they're famous only in Philly, in that area, because of their street shows, and they were just playing local theaters. There was no TV, there was no sold-out opera houses yet. That was coming some years later, and they gave me my first lesson. Teller taught me some magic tricks, and he told me which books to study in the library. So I learned some magic tricks, and a week later I was on the street performing. And I was performing, warming up the audiences for them. And I remember one weekend they went away. They went to San Francisco. And a very stupid decision I made was I did a magic trick with three rings. And I stole it from Teller. And I did the trick like he does. And when they came back the following weekend, they had a talk with me, went for a coffee, and they said, listen, what you're doing is wrong. You can't take this idea. This is our idea.
Mm-hmm.
And if we didn't love you, we would break your legs.
Right.
So did I learn? No. I still stole stuff. I stole stuff and I changed it.
I wrote it down and I cancelled it. I wanted to say, when you see something, and because you're a creator, so you must see
I'm
things.
I'm a creator
think,
to a point.
I can change that. I can make that my own. Yeah. People wouldn't even recognize that I took it, because I think creators somehow they can see a picture and see something else out of it. That they just it, something. You know, these whole brainstorming, you know, somebody says something which is totally relevant to go somewhere completely different. So when you see things, you must see things and just go, I can do something like that, but I can make it my own.
Yeah, or I go, they wouldn't even I go, why it. The hell didn't I think of that? That's
right,
brilliant. That's bright. I want it, but I took one idea once from someone and I wrote to him a letter and I said, I love what you're doing. Can I do that? And he said, no. Fuck off, it's my idea.
Right.
So, okay, I did it anyway.
Right.
And I changed it so much that 2 years later when we met, he he shook my hand and said, you know, I don't like that you took it, but you took it and changed it. Now, this is funny.
You evolved it.
This, no, I got to tell you something funny. What's funny, I find this funny, I have to laugh at myself. I have to laugh at myself because I get mad when I see younger artists taking ideas of mine that I took from someone else. And then I complain to the artists, hey, that's, you know, you can't do that.
Right.
But the back of my head, I'm thinking, why can't he? It's not your idea. Mm-hmm. So, and in the past couple of years, I've had experiences where I've been in contact with people who are taking ideas from me and talking to them about it and say, why are you doing this? And they say, because my idol, and I want to be like you. And I tell them that you can't be like me. Be like you and change the idea. Change if you take something,
you
change
it.
And they change. Some of them change it so much, so fantastic that they're doing what I do, but better than me. They probably
is that
shouldn't
a compliment
say that.
Or does please, it piss please. You off?
It pisses me off, and I admire them for that. That's art, you know. If you can. Art is like that. It's business. Why do you think they call it show business?
We are so lucky to be in that business because we're going to be with some 20-year-old kid or a 30-year-old person, and they just do something where you go, fuck, where did that come from? And it's just amazing. Love that about that.
I can't believe how many people I'm influencing. I got today. I could show you on my cell phone, but no. I got a letter from a clown from Circus O. It was one of Soleil's shows.
Yeah, yeah, it was the big water show.
I didn't see it, but he wrote to me and he said, I just want to tell you that you are the reason I became a clown. I've heard that sometimes, that it never stops to touch me. It's so beautiful to hear that.
Yeah.
I am the reason. He saw me in Roncalli, and I touched him so deeply that I'm the reason, I'm the impulse for his career in theater.
So when I say you're a legend, because if you have that effect on people, that they
follow. Am I really a legend?
Well, I mean,
I've just done some nice things for some people.
But you've touched some people where that influences them to make a life out of it.
Yeah,
I like being inspired by you.
It's lovely to inspire people. That's why I started to study sociology. I wanted to change the world, make it a better place. And I love to study human behavior, why people do the things that they do.
You're doing your part.
And now I'm not changing the world, mm-hmm. but I'm changing a few people here and there.
Yeah.
That's enough.
Yeah. Hey, talking about a few people, if you look at our...
Going bananas.
If you look at our screen here,
I also want to say that people should see me in Palazzo. That's another, it's a smaller circus. It's a dinner show.
And I have to stop for 2 seconds.
Go.
Sorry. We're going to get to... Yeah, it was on. I don't
How
know
am
whether
I doing?
It's timed out.
You heard you're a circus?
I don't know whether it's timed out. It was F5, yeah? Normally? Yeah.
You did?
Sorry, I should have pressed. I'll start again from
there.
Yeah, we're going to... We'll pick up back on Roncalli.
What were they saying then?
Because that you'd worked with Roncalli, and I'll pick up from that, and then I'm going to go to the pictures.
Wait, I don't remember what I was saying. Does
about
it matter?
The dinner show.
Oh, Palazzo.
Palazzo. Which Palazzo were you in?
So I did the Palazzo that was in Amsterdam and in Berlin and Hamburg, and I did the good one.
I met you at Palazzo in Amsterdam last year.
Yes. So yep. This Palazzo is beautiful. And now they're taking a pause because of the corona.
Yeah.
And they're building up, they're renovating all the Spiegelzelts.
Are they?
Yeah. And we're going to start again next year.
It's, I mean, the beauty of that concept, the Palazzo Spiegelzelts, are the reason why they can't do it, right? Because it's so intimate, it's fantastic. Everyone's got a great connection.
Yes.
For you must love it because yes. You've got everybody around you.
Well, we say in the world of comedy, comedy needs company, and there
yeah.
you have it.
Yeah. No, I wish I would. totally understandable that they can't take a risk this year on that, because obviously they don't want to share this pandemic with everybody.
Magic.
That was magic. Talking about magic, I've got some old pictures.
Oh yeah, that was a couple of months ago.
That was just a couple of months ago?
Yeah, looks like it. Looks like it.
You colored your hair.
I did. Get some
Where
eyes.
Is that?
This was my first season. This was in Dusseldorf.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first city I lived in Germany. That's Dusseldorf. That's backstage moments before I'm going.
Do you remember sitting there?
I do. I remember that moment.
Yeah?
Uh-huh. Yes. I couldn't believe that this was happening to me. Some months before that, I was performing with Roman Polanski and Amadeus. And that was the best sold out show that Paris had within 5 years, 5 year period. And I was in that show, but I was not the star of the show. I was just there was 12 people in that show, and I was one of the. I had a non speaking part in Amadeus with Roman Polanski. I was a servant to Roman Polanski. So here I'm sitting and thinking. Marveling at the fact that I'm in this wonderful circus.
I think we are.
That was Polanski.
Nice segue into that picture. But this is the Polanski Amadeus, right?
Yeah. And I was playing, I had, you see behind him, there are on his. Right, our right, his left side.
Yep.
I was wearing a Baroque, a wig like that, and my job was to be the servant to Polanski, who was playing Mozart. And Mozart, in the play, he dies. Mm-hmm. He dies a poor drunk. He dies on a table, on a kitchen table. And my job is to tilt the table up, and he slides off the table. The door opens, and he falls. And one night I put it on the wrong spot, and when he fell, he hit his lower back, and he had to go to the hospital. He hated me.
Well,
I mean, it was an accident.
I'm going to go back to the top, because I've got a couple of... and this is a similar time now.
Yeah, that's right, that's right. That's back, that's before the finale.
Mm-hmm.
We were always in the finale carrying balloons, and then I don't know why, but many other circuses picked up that idea, and I think a lot of circuses got ideas from Roncalli. You know that? And the other artist in the back, that was my best friend in the circus. He was an acrobat.
Yeah.
But he would be juggling. On a unicycle, and then he would throw coffee plates on his head, and then coffee cups, and it was amazing.
A bit like the Chinese do.
Yes, the Chinese stole it from
30 girls. 30 girls doing it.
Yes, but it was more dramatic to see him do it. He would sweat. His name is Angelo Ballon.
Yeah,
and it's amazing. And I love that this moment is frozen, because it always reminds me of the time my first season in Roncalli, and.
Roncalli's been great for you now, 20 years.
Yeah, I played there for 6 years.
6 years.
Yeah, and it was amazing.
For the full German tour.
And I never did another circus. I never did a season of another circus. That was hard to get better than Roncalli. Or I'm going to do Canis. That's on the same level. Cirque du Soleil asked me several times.
Yeah.
And I was pretty close, but it didn't work out for one reason or another. One year because my son died. My son was killed in an accident. And a few months after that, they asked me, would you like to join the circus, join the show? We'll build a show around you. And I said, no, I'm not ready because my son died. And I'm...
Luca.
Yeah, Luca died, and I need more time to grieve and to go... And they said, yeah, that's why we're offering it to you. We thought maybe, you know, if you come into the show, you can forget about it for a while. And I said, no, I don't want to forget about it. I want to keep it in me
No, I saw your the very emotional video where you were talking about it.
Oh yeah, it's on. And someone put it on YouTube.
Yeah. Well, it's very touching, and to be honest, I thank the Lord that I haven't had to experience that. But
it's every parent's worst nightmare.
Worst nightmare.
Yeah.
I'm sorry if it's hard for you to talk about, because I can't imagine, especially for the job, you have to share love and joy to people, and going through something like that, I can't imagine.
I think it's more difficult for other people to talk about than for me, because it puts us all in touch with discomfort. It puts us in touch with our own pain, and we don't want to go there. But it is part of my life. I had to go through this unfortunate experience, and to survive mentally, I've had to integrate it in my life, and I've done so. And I'm running workshops now for other parents who've lost children.
Yeah.
And the workshop is called "The Show Must Go On."
I mean that's great. It's great that you help people from your experience.
Mm.
And I can't imagine having to go through that. And like I said, in your profession, that when you step on stage, whatever's happening behind the stage, I want to say they don't care. You know, the guests, they don't know. They don't know what's going on in your personal life. And I don't want to say they don't care. They just don't know. And I always tell a dancer or an ice skater, you know, if your dog just died or something like that, the people don't know. And, you know, please share. You have to look great and happy on stage.
I say the same in other words. I say you have to sell your pleasure and hide your pain. If your dog died this morning, that's a tragedy, and I'm sure it affects the artist. Mm-hmm. But you can't come on stage and say, you know what, my dog died, because no one gives a shit, and they shouldn't. Yeah. In that moment, they will care after and before. But when you're on stage as a clown, the clown has to save the show. The clown has to save the world. There's a pandemic. That's okay. There's a pandemic. The clowns, we're here to save the world. We'll get through this. Because the clown represents hope. So if my son died, it's so terrible. You have no idea.
No, I don't.
No.
I try to feel the emotion.
Yeah.
But honestly, as much as I would...
you can't, because because we're wired to survive. And to survive, we have to cut off the pain after a while. You know, you can imagine it. You can be very empathetic with me. You can exercise. Well, I mean, when you hear my story, it invites you to be empathetic with me. Mm. With me. But you can only do that, I think, for a while, and then your mind cuts it off. But I have to live with that.
Is it, well, I can't say, it must be constantly with you.
Yeah. Well, it comes in waves, like I feel it now, it's affecting me emotionally. It doesn't always.
I'm sorry to bring that to you, but like...
But why would you be sorry? You know, you're doing...
Well, because I'm sad for you. I'm sad for the situation that...
You know what you're doing right now? You're doing me a favor, because you're putting me in touch with my emotions, and there's nothing wrong with that. And sadness is okay if it's not the only emotion. And thank God emotions are not too sticky. They don't stay too long. So I feel sad in the moment, but at the same time... You're making me remember my son, and mm-hmm. and he's not here, but in a way he still is here for me. He lives in my heart. He lives in my memory. So when you talk about Luca, when I hear this word come out of your mouth, it impacts me. It triggers something beautiful. So I might look sad, but that's great. I'm feeling my emotion.
Yeah.
And thank you for that. Most people are too afraid to ask me about my son.
Wow.
So you know what I did? When my son died, 1 week later I did a show. And everyone said, are you crazy? You know, I had a show. He died on a Monday. And on Saturday I had a show. And everyone said, don't do it. Come on, don't. Everyone will understand. You can cancel the show.
Yeah.
And I said, no. I wanna feel what it's like now. I want to see what is this experience to be able to do a performance of clowning. And it was an unbelievable, interesting experience.
But you weren't happy.
What?
You weren't happy.
No one ever, that's a good question. No one ever asked me that. I've told this story before, but no one ever said, but you weren't happy. It was a mixture. It was unhappy. He died unhappy, like the at the bottom.
The worst.
I've never been at the bottom of the pit of pain like that, and I was at the bottom of the pit until the performance, and then that was part of my history, and the suffering. The suffering came up until I stepped on stage and I said, listen, suffering, fuck you. I'll be back. The suffering will be in the future. But right now, for the clowning to work, I need to connect to this audience. And it was cathartic. It was like therapeutic. I had to connect just to be with this audience.
I don't want to say under such a terrible, devastating situation. Did you challenge yourself to succeed?
I challenged myself to just be and to be with these people and to be with whatever I'm feeling. And I didn't know if I would start crying in that show or not, but I played with the energy in the room, and everybody in that room knew that my son died because they're all from Hanover. It was a show in Hanover and it was on the front pages, so everyone knew. So there was already a feeling of uncomfortable. Everybody was uncomfortable. They came, I don't know why they came.
Right.
But they knew, we're going to see a show of a clown whose son died a few days ago. So I thought, this is the show of my life,
mm-hmm.
for me and for them. Because they're always going to probably remember, we went to see a clown show after this guy's son died some days. He didn't cancel. Why didn't he cancel? Because I wanted to have, because the clown represents hope. The clown says, we die, we all die, we all share that in common. So let's celebrate the moment that we have now together. This is about now.
But you had no opportunity to explain that to the audience. You performed your...
Well, it was in my mind, and the mistake I made was I tried to explain it to them at the very end of the show.
Yeah.
You know what I said? They're leaving. They gave me a... They stood up. They stood up. I think they stood up not only because I gave a good show, because they felt sorry for me. And so the mistake I did was I'm waving goodbye, and I didn't want to leave. I just waved. The lights came up, and I kept waving. And as I explained earlier, the clown is always looking for the game in the moment. So this was a game, breaking the rules of saying goodbye, because normally you say thank you, bye, and you leave. And here I'm standing there. And they're leaving, but they're not sure. Suddenly the audience was unsure about what their role is. Should
right.
they leave?
I mean,
the lights are up, so the show's over. We should leave. But he stays there. And then I took the microphone, and this was the mistake. I said, thank you. Thank you for being here with me. You know, when I wave, I'm saying goodbye to all of you, but I'm also saying goodbye to my son, whose energy, whose spirit is still alive in all of you, because we're all interconnected. And someone from the audience said, Peter, stop, don't say this. We love you. You're from Hanover. You're the clown of our city. But don't put us in touch with our pain. We know what happened, but it's not fair. You invite us to a clown show,
yep.
Then don't sell your tragedy. We know what happened. And I thought that some people said, boo, But I understood him, and I thought, he's right. When you do a clown show, or when you do an ice skating show,
response like that.
Yeah, it was honest.
Yeah,
I mean, it was honest. Someone tell it was. I love that.
We don't deserve that.
What?
We don't deserve that. The emotion, the heavy. Yeah, trauma.
Maybe it's too much for him.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah,
trauma.
Yeah. If you go to a clown show, you want to laugh. I don't want to cry because of somebody's personal
even
tragedy.
Even though they were already traumatized for you.
Yes. But so what I did was I wanted to incorporate the death of my son in my show without underlining it to the audience.
Yeah.
So now every time you come to see me in a solo show, after 2 hours the show's over, as you're leaving, I stand on the stage and I wait till everybody has left. And they love this. They laugh. They laugh because they don't know the truth behind this game.
Right.
If they would know my son died, they wouldn't laugh. Because when you cannot laugh at the comedian when you feel sorry for him. That's really important. No. When you feel sorry for a guy on stage, it's hard to laugh. But when you don't know the game, you don't know the reason, the logic behind the game, it's lighter. And yet, people still come to me after the show and they say, I loved your show, I love the ending. I don't know why, but my hair stands up when you're waving. And it's not that they feel that my son's not here, but it's this saying goodbye. Saying goodbye is it's full of humanity.
Mm.
Because we all know this, saying goodbye. And sometimes we say goodbye, I'll see you tomorrow. Sometimes we say goodbye, and we'll never see that person again. And I didn't get a chance to say goodbye to my son. He just died in 1 second. We were in a cafe, in a restaurant, and he got up from the table and was going over to look at a sculpture. And, you know, like a good father, you scan the room, you make sure everything's okay, and I thought it's okay. I didn't know in this restaurant that there was a sculpture in the corner that an artist had put there some weeks before to show off his art. And it was top heavy. It was a piece of wood with a very heavy stone on the top. And my son looked back to me like, look, Papa, look, this is so cool. Look what I have. And I saw him pull it down on him and I saw it kill him, which is... I don't even want to name it, you know,
no.
It's just that experience.
I don't know whether it's an out-of-body experience. I don't know whether it's an out... whether I wouldn't want to lighten it by saying, but it is so traumatic, I can't relate.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah, you can relate a bit, because we have this empathy in us.
Yeah.
And you have more empathy, I feel, than many people, and you can feel, you imagine you could feel as much as you should. Just that you let me tell the story, just that you listen to me, is good for me, and it's good for you to see me living the nightmare that you would have, because you think as a parent, if my kid, if this happened, I can never go on. I'm a good example for parents who've had this terrible experience. I'm a good example. I'm the example that life, you know, three words, life goes on.
Well, so
that's that part.
That's part.
It must affect me somehow. It must impact my work, you know.
Of course, I think that we are all a creation of our baggage.
Yeah.
You know, of course your experience.
Yeah.
But what you've learned by going into a supermarket and saying, hey, people say put your mask on or something like this, or and they get aggressive, or you're at the bank or something like this. I think we're all made up of all these little things.
What is this? What's the example of the bank and the mask?
No, but every experience that we have, whether you go into a place and somebody shouts at you because you're not wearing at me today, you haven't got your mask on. And of course, but I'm just saying all these experiences, and what I have always thought with my children is that I can never control what they will retain in their lives. I always remember from a child, I can't even remember, I must be 3 or 4 years old, I remember washing my hands at the sink. And I remember as clear as today, my father was washing my hands, and his hands were big hands around my little, tiny little 3 or 4 year old hands. I remember that very clearly. And I'm, as a parent, I've got my my children, and when we go on vacation or do something like this, I am very aware that whatever I do, as they have no control, I have no control out of whatever we do, what will they retain as a lifelong memory? You have lifelong memories with your family, and they have no control. They've probably given you, or my family gave me, the best vacations they could, or the best experiences that they could, whether our finances or something like that. All of it's out the window, because I might remember, which I do remember, playing cricket in the back garden with my father in the old petrol can, which was the wicket. That he didn't make that as a lifelong, but I have that memory very clearly in my mind.
It was never that he played that moment with you and said, remember this game, you're going to remember this 40 years from now.
No,
we don't know, but we are the result of our experiences.
Yeah, and you can draw
the good and the bad
when you least expect it, when it can just come back to you. Yeah. Not through a premonition or through a dream or something. Yeah. It's like, been there before or something like that.
Yeah, right? I feel that now in the corona times. I feel like, oh my God, people are grieving. We're grieving the life we used to have. It's like the life we had before, it died. And I'm feeling, this is familiar. This is like losing a child. So yeah. I feel a little bit more prepared to go through this because
You've experienced so much already.
Yeah, I feel like after you experience the loss of a child, nothing touches you, or it's lighter. It's like I have won that war, so now it's easier to go into battle against this war against the corona. And I think we all have to do that. We all have to say this corona, it's a silent enemy. It is a war against the silent enemy. We can't let it win. And so it's a certain attitude.
Human nature won't let it win, because we are all survivors in our own way. No, there's not too many people giving up. I can't take this anymore. We'll find our way. How it will be, but it will be a different. It'll be different.
It's like human nature against nature.
Yeah.
And I think we also have to remind ourselves that we are tourists, we are visitors on this earth. The earth does not need us. We need the earth.
We're a blink.
We're tourists here.
Another. This is the same era now.
Yes, that was the second year, and he was a wonderful. He's a wonderful person. His name is Pick. He's a Swiss clown. I used to. I don't think he knows this, but I used to sneak behind the curtain every night, the whole season, and watch his show. It was phenomenal. You can see him on YouTube, Pick, P-I-C.
Are you guys competitive clowns in any way?
I guess a little bit, but if you're a good human being, then you're also interested to be friends and to find things that you like in other people.
Oh, I think you've been competitive against my friends as well, though. If they're in the same, playing tennis or something like that, but also, you know, if you're both performing in the same show, are you competitive about I rocked it tonight better than him?
Yes, we would talk about that too. Yeah, yeah, we shared that. And we would listen to the success at the end, in the finale, the amount of applause.
Right, right, right.
And I would look at two people. I didn't even look at the audience. During the applause, I'd look to him to see his reaction. And I would look at my boss, Bernard Paul.
Right.
And Bernard wanted me to have a lot of success. He loved the clowns.
Your success was his success as well.
That's
of
right.
Of course, that's his, where he comes from. It's his heart. The clown comedy performance. No.
Yes.
Because he knows how. He's a very creative man. No. He knows how to because he gives a very creative, high quality product. The whole Roncalli.
Yeah. My God. Because he just has his hands on everything. He has good taste and the whole environment, the architecture, the lights, the sound, the music, the costumes. He took me to a secondhand shop and said, "That's your costume," and it stayed ever since. I came there with jeans and some stupid shirt. He said, "Your costume is shit." I said, well, what do you want me to do? He said, I want you to come with me. We'll go to a flea market or a secondhand shop, and those are your pants, and you'll wear shirts like this, and you'll wear suspenders. But now my advice to clowns, don't go that way. If you're going to be a clown, find your own style. Don't be a clown who's going to come in with a suitcase and...
Don't put it on the floor, for sure.
Don't put it on the floor.
Otherwise, you're never going to Crazy Horse.
That's right. Find your own style. Don't do what everyone else is doing.
So when you work with somebody, do you recreate, do you build something for them?
Yeah, I build something for people. Yeah, and I also work in workshops with business people, business CEOs. I work with Adidas and Mercedes, and I work at the Autostadt and Gerhard Schroeder. He was my next door neighbor. We live next to each other in Hanover. And I help people, I create them, I just create their aura. I give them a bigger aura. Because with this aura, people will like you. And if you're someone who is talking in front of people, or if you're someone who is communicating, which is practically everybody on the earth.
Confidence is very attractive, right?
Confidence is nice, yes.
Or, you need another drink.
I'm good.
You're good?
Yeah.
I've got some more pictures all about this same era. We're going to get to other pictures.
Yeah, these photographers, they would provoke me backstage. I just wanted to relax backstage. And there was like always these
three or four. Hang on,
and they were like, give us something, give us something. What do you want from me?
Yeah, so I've got to give something creative.
Yes.
And deeper than this. But you were...
Oh, my God. I haven't seen that photo in years. The woman behind me, she's a costume designer, and the woman in front of me was a famous painter from Dusseldorf. I don't want to give names. And the shirt I'm wearing, I got this. It was one of the first comedy clubs I played at in Atlantic City. It was called the Comedy Stop.
Yeah.
The Comedy Stop. And in the same time, it was a comedy club called Going Bananas. Yeah.
In Atlantic City?
In Atlantic City in 1982.
Called Going Bananas.
It was called Going Bananas. Yeah, they probably took the idea from this.
So in 38 years?
Yeah.
You're back on Going Bananas.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, no, how cool is that?
What goes around comes around. That's cool.
There you go. So that same t-shirt. Pretty girls.
Yeah.
Oh, there! I thought
that's winning Monte Carlo, I think that's Cirque du Mar.
Is it really?
It's Cirque du Mar because the costume I was wearing. This is the clothes that Bernard Paul said you can't wear that.
Right.
You can't come out as a clown, and it looks too cheap, and you don't want to expose. You know. Your body is not that beautiful that you should show it off like that. You should cover it up with a shirt.
But if that was Cirque du Mar, that wasn't in the big Cirque Phoenix that they do it now. Was
No, that was
that
in
Bouglion's Cirque d'Hiver.
Yeah.
I never saw the Cirque du Mar in the Cirque d'Hiver. I've only seen it in
Some years later.
Yeah. I think I've been going there for the last 11 years. And this is which year?
1985.
All right. Yeah. 85. Yeah. I was.
I was really happy.
I was not in Paris at that time. No, but it's a great honor to run the Cirque du Mar. It's probably the second after
Monte Carlo.
No.
Yeah. It was great, and in those days there was no internet.
Yeah.
Which was important because someone told me Peter. You should go join the circus. And so I went there and I said, I'd like to join the circus competition. And they said, well, you need to have some circus experience. And I just lied. I said, yeah, I'm from the Pickle Apple Circus in California.
Right.
And they couldn't look it up on the internet. They just believed me. I said, okay, you're in. And I had no circus experience. And I won the second prize. And then all the circuses from all over the world jumped on me and offered me contracts. And I thought about it and I went to Germany.
In those days, because you didn't have an email address.
Yeah.
So how are they finding you? Because I told you my experience and all that. No cell phone, no email address or something. And then where's your home address?
I lived in Paris.
Did you have a fixed home address?
I had a small apartment over the Alcazar, the club, nightclub, Alcazar. In the Marais? No, not in Marais. It's a restaurant
now? It's a restaurant now, the Alcazar. I walked past it about 10 years ago. It's just a restaurant. And great name.
Yeah, I had an apartment about as small as this room here with a fireplace. And so when I won won this festival, Cirque du Dumas, I had about 100 business cards. And so I didn't have a business card. I was so unprofessional. I just was writing my number down on a piece of paper. And there was no cell phone. So I just gave... I don't even think I had a phone. I just gave my address. They had to send me letters. Whew, what a different world that was.
I remember. I don't know how we ever did it. You know, cutting music was a nightmare in our day. You know, because I had the reel-to-reel. You know, we had to splice it. You know, now you can cut it on your iPhone.
Yeah, when you were cutting music, I was listening to your music on a Walkman.
Yeah.
They don't even know. Walkman's not even a word in our vocabulary anymore.
Yeah, no. My kids wouldn't even know what a reel-to-reel, the old tape players that we had.
The technology is changing much faster than humanity, than the human beings.
Yeah.
We evolve, but not so fast like the technology. But one thing that's constant is comedy. People laugh then, they laugh now. No.
Absolutely.
And it's very important.
Absolutely.
The comedy and to go into a space where you feel... It's nice to be alive. That's what your place is like here. People come through the doors here and
you can feel the difference.
You're celebrating humanity here.
Like I think you said that we're, what did you say today? There's nowhere better in the world than this place, or this is the best place in the world, or you said something about Europa Park.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did. I'm sure we had the... I'm sure you were mic'd up at that
point. It's on some video camera somewhere.
Yeah, for sure. But not because I work here, but you can feel the difference. When you come through the door here, you can feel that there is an owning family. We're not just owned by a family. We're run by a family who care. They live on the park.
Yeah, you feel that someone cares here.
Yeah.
I don't see the family. I see you. Yeah. To me, you are like,
I'm educated by
life
them.
This is like Jurassic Park for me. But in the movie, Jurassic Park was the celebration of dinosaurs. This is a celebration of humans.
Yeah.
Human to human. And it's really
great. I'm just an extension of the owning family. Because I'm educated by them, I'm inspired by them, totally, that their honest commitment to the guest. It's simply that.
How did they get the idea? I mean, in America we have these amusement parks, but I don't see it together with theater.
Well,
can we interview you? Let me interview you.
I'll just tell you a very, very brief, because you're interested, and I think somehow the Peter Shub show should be to quench your thirst of knowledge as well. Europa Park... Mack Rides is a ride manufacturer. Started making little trains and circus wagons. I'm sure you've slept in a Mack wagon in the circuses. They used to make all these trains and circus wagons, and it evolved all the way through the years. And then they started making water rides. They are one of the leading ride manufacturers in the world. This is Mack. It's 240 years old, something like that. And this is from Valdkirch to only 30, 40 minutes drive from here. And 45 years ago, or probably a few years just before that, our creator, Roland Mack, with his father, Franz Mack, working for the Mack Rides, the ride manufacturer, making water log flumes and water rides around the world. As far as I understand, Roland and his father said, why don't we just buy a piece of land, put our rides on this piece of land, and use it as a showcase? We can charge and get some money for the entrance, but then we can show our products. Europa Park is still a showcase for Mack Rides today. And that's how it happened. If I start quoting numbers, I believe this product, I live this product, and I truly love this product. If I start quoting numbers, I might be wrong. As far as I know, in the first year in 1975, everyone said it won't work. Roland Mack and his father, Franz Mack, are crazy. They're kind of building an amusement park in the middle of nowhere. It's not close to Freiburg. It's not close to Strasbourg in France. Won't work. Won't happen. I think 250,000 people came that first year. Blew everyone out of the water.
He beat the odds.
No, blew everyone out of the water. And then the next year, as far as I understand it, I think I've read reports, maybe 700,000 people came the next year. It was amazing. So it's built like that. What this whole company is built on is true passion and completely unquestionable, unconditional desire to give the guest a great day. And all of the rides,
you feel it.
80% of the rides at Europa Park are built by our own manufacturer in Valker, 30-40 minutes away from here. So we're still a showcase. We build a fantastic new ride, never seen before and anywhere in the world. It's at Europa Park.
I don't care. I don't care about the rides. What impacted me today was seeing two families having a water balloon fight.
Yeah.
You wanted to show me different parts. Yeah. I couldn't leave that spot.
Yeah.
You were telling me stories also. You have some history about this water fighting. You told me on your way to work, sometimes you have to walk by and you forget about it, and you're arriving early in the morning and suddenly there's a water balloon exploding at your feet and your whole pants are wet and you come inside and all your artists are laughing because they know it just happened. But you could have the latest state-of-the-art technology here in this park, which you do.
And a 1 cent
or 2 cent balloon fighting was touching me. And it's just humans having fun together.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm doing. I'm selling the fun of being human. The fun of being, this is our time together. This is our, you know, billions of people have been on this planet before us and billions will be after us, probably. But in this small moment of on the time
blink
scale,
not even a blink of an eye.
Yeah, it's our time.
Yeah.
And so this is a space which says, come here, have fun celebrating with people you love, your family, and then go home. It doesn't solve people's problems. It doesn't take the problems away, but it makes you feel better for a little while.
Right.
That's what we do. And that's why I want to work here, because I'm a freelance artist and I'm attracted to places where people are meeting in masses. Like here, there's so many people coming here.
Mm.
And
the guest is loyal. The guests have learned to trust Europa Park.
Yeah.
They come back every year. They know the family have invested. You know, before I started working from here, I came here looking for somewhere to live to start working here. I would speak to everyone. They had no idea who I was. I would say, do you like working here? They said, I'm living my dream. And everyone is through that. But it comes from Franz Mack to Roland Mack to Jürgen Mack, his brother, down through the family. Everyone is living their dream working at this place. Because we're all living it. And they're entertainers. They would, you know what, they'd have all these shows if nobody came. Because they just love it. They love to laugh. They love the craziness of the creative mind. Whether you're a handstand person or an acrobat or a clown or a circus performer or a musician, they love that. It fills their joy. And then what they want to do is give it to their guest. And then watch their guest go, I love this. And that's the reward.
Really? Really? You used to walk around here and no one knew you? Because
before
it's hard to believe that today,
here.
Because when I walk around you today, I feel like I'm walking around with a famous movie star. All the workers know you.
Because we're in a small world. Everyone works together. I wish I had more opportunities to work with more different departments. Now we're very big. I worked here in 1993, and we were
1993. You must have been like 8 years old.
Yeah, sort of. I worked here a long time ago, and it was a much smaller park, much more intimate, and the same.
What
spirit.
Did they have like three rides then?
They didn't have the big silver star. They didn't have any hotels.
I bet the water balloons, that was the first
it probably
thing
was
here, and everything was built around the water balloons.
It was a very, very, let's say at that time I felt that it was maybe a bit more of a younger park. They weren't the big high-powered roller coasters at that time. That came a little later. I can't tell you the dates and stuff. But I know Blue Fire.
Why not? I want the dates.
Yeah, well, I can tell you
Blue Fire. I'm going to walk out of this interview. I want the dates. No, you're a very good historian.
I think 212 Woden and Arthur came a bit after.
But it was a Thursday.
Now they try to cater for really the whole family. We've got all these shows on the park, which will bring people. There's a lot of people that come to the park that don't want to do a roller coaster.
Who comes to the park and doesn't do a roller coaster?
I would say
that's like going to a circus and not seeing a clown.
Nah, but I just say maybe the big roller, the big ones, which you're gonna.
I want to do that tomorrow.
You're gonna do the Blue Fire with me tomorrow.
Yes.
And Woden, and Silver Star.
Yeah.
And Arthur.
No.
And Voltairia.
Stop! I'm getting sick already.
And Pirates of Batavia.
Oh, no!
No, let's go. Let's move through. This is the. There it is. That's. Bernard Poole?
Yeah, the clown in the middle.
Yeah. But he must have been a big inspiration for you also, no? No?
I haven't heard that question in a long time. He must have been, he believed in me. He saw me in Paris. And he believed in me before anyone else. He was the first one to come over and say, it's great what you do. Why don't you try it in my circus? And then the other circuses saw him talking to me, and then they came over and said, well, wait, if Bernard Paul is talking to you, maybe he knows something we don't know.
Right.
Would you like to come over? And he inspired me, and he believed in me. He gave me a really nice chance.
You know, we've had Lily, his daughter, on the Going Banana show.
Really?
Yeah.
She played here?
Yeah. No, she was on the Going Banana show in this studio, sitting in the same chair.
She was talking.
Yeah. Just after she'd won the Let's Dance. Did you see her on the...
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, she was here.
She must have mentioned me about 5 or 6 times.
I'll have to check through the tapes, but I think she did. That will go back. We'll go back. Reini will go back. He'll bring it.
Olaf is the photographer. He's putting all these photos on Facebook these days.
Yeah.
And we had a big fight a couple of days ago. And now we're friends. He said, hey, Peter, don't be so angry. Let's have a phone call. And we talked. Because he put something derogatory. I thought he put a photo of me and a woman on Facebook. And then he mentioned something how I'm flirting with women, and I don't flirt with women, and I didn't like that he said that. I was kind of angry, but these photos are from him. His professional name is Navigo.
The star of the show is the clown, right?
Where you mean?
You're the red line. It's what keeps the show together, right?
I think so.
Fantastic acts.
I think clown is to circus what roller coaster is to an amusement park.
It's not everything.
No.
But it's the core.
It's a core, and it's we have to save the show. If something goes wrong, they always say, send in the clowns.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what we're doing. That's what I'm doing now. I Corona's here,
mm-hmm.
So I hear in my mind... the director of the world saying, Peter, send in the clowns, do something. So now I'm teaching online. I'm directing clowns on the internet.
What's that, through your website?
It's through my website. And it's also, I'm giving for free the possibility to meet once or twice a week what's called the Lost Tourist. You can mm-hmm. find it on Facebook or on Instagram. And it's for totally for free, but there's never more than 10 or 12 people each week. And all we do is, it's a very slow, like meditative way to have a connection between humans. We try to make the deep dive into how it is to communicate, but not with all stories about your past,
right.
About how the story of now, the story of what's it like being with 10 other people right now, seeing each other on Zoom,
right,
and then, so that's free.
Right? 40 years ago, when you left Pennsylvania, you wouldn't have thought you would be doing a Zoom class.
No, I mean, two years ago, I had never thought I'd be saying some of the things I'm saying now.
Right.
Like a year ago, I would never dream that I'll go into a bank and halfway in the door think, oh, I better go out. I forgot my mask.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. I do look. I saw somebody in the pharmacy. She had her mask on, and I thought, I think it's going to stay like this forever. I thought places like that, I think they're never going to take their masks off. Bakeries and stuff like that, where they've got personal contact to.
Can you imagine the children who are growing up today? They're going to grow up and say, you know, they're going to tell their children that our grandparents used to walk around without masks.
No,
really? How terrible!
Oh, that's disgusting. Did they spit all over your food? Yes. Okay, where's this
You're
one?
You're funny sometimes.
No, where's that?
Oh, this is in Moscow.
Moscow?
Yeah. I never would wear a watch anymore. This is really the beginning. I was 1 month in Roncalli. I wouldn't wear a watch because it's too much reminding us of every day.
Yeah,
and time. The clown.
Schedule. Got to finish. Or yes. Got to get up.
Terrible.
Got to go to bed.
Terrible. It looks like so. I'm in Moscow. I was the first American clown to play in Russia.
It was, really?
Yeah. 1986. That was.
Yeah. 86. That was just what?
That was before the wall came down. The wall came down.
Right.
Some years later, and I met the most famous Russian clown. During these days, this week,
it King was of Clowns.
Popov.
Popov.
Oleg Popov.
I've seen a photo with you with him and other people.
Yeah, we did a tour together
King
in Germany.
King of Clowns.
Yeah, King of Clowns, yeah. 5 years ago, and we toured Germany. We're going to do it again.
Sadly, not with Popov.
Well, he'll be there with us.
Yeah, always. Now we're back to that. And then you get to, like I said, somehow, because I've done production. Production shows, the clown, the funny guy is probably the star. He's the one that when you get someone like this, he's the one that he wants to meet.
Yeah, funny.
Not me doing a handstand or I wasn't a handstand. But they want to meet the guy that sort of made them feel
but
something.
But I was always the one who said, look, I know you're interested in the clown, but come back and meet the acrobats and the other ones.
Right, they're,
because we're all doing this. We're all one for all and all for one. We're a family. And yeah, that was great. Got to meet a lot of these.
Yeah, I've seen lots of, but I've seen your work, not live. I've seen your work with L'Oreal, mega star. He's in everyone's DNA in Germany, right?
He is, and that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah,
no, that really, was amazing. Yeah. One day, I just got a call, and it was him. He didn't call his secretary or his agent manager. He called me directly. And I pick up the phone, and he said, hello, this is L'Oreal. And I was just kind of new in Germany. I sort of knew who it was, but I thought it was a joke. This can't be true. And he was speaking German. I said, sorry, do you speak English? Mein Deutsch ist ganz schlecht. Können Sie mit mir Englisch sprechen?
Right.
So we did a gemischte Salat from English and German. It was really nice. And he said, I've seen your work. And I want to do a number with you for Stars in the Menagerie. Are you interested?
That's what I saw.
Yeah. He's asking me, am I interested?
Did you realize that was
I don't know if I'm interested. I don't know. I'm really busy, but I think I could fit it in.
Maybe. Or just say, no, I'm watching TV that night. But
watching my favorite comedian, Otto.
Right.
I'm sorry. No.
Otto. I think we might have a picture of you and Otto. But did you realize that you're working with somebody who people really have grown up with?
Yeah, I didn't realize it then. But I mean, as I was telling people I'm going to work with him, they sort of told me he is like the Charlie Chaplin of Germany.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I told you my colleague that I'm in my office with, and he said, "Oh my God, Peter is a legend." But so is L'Oreal, and they work together.
He
said exactly that.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's nice.
And this
was in Munich at the GOP Variety.
Yeah.
This was one of the last performances he saw live. His doctor had told him he shouldn't really go out and see any more shows. But when I was in Munich, Dorothy Koss, my manager, she called and said, you know, Peter's playing here. And he said, oh, I definitely want to come. I want to come. He came with his doctor and his wife. His doctor came with him.
No way. How old is he? He's pretty...
I think there he's about...
He's pretty up there now.
He's 140. And during the pause, we came outside and we were playing like kids. He was doing finger tricks with me, and we were pretending we were because the press was there, you know.
Right.
Comedians, but press, you just show off. And he was doing things that physically he shouldn't do.
Yeah.
Physically he shouldn't be putting his, but he was doing this because of the press and he's a big kid. He's a big child.
Yeah, had a wonderful career and made a lot of people forget their daily troubles.
But I asked him, we worked a week together every day for 4 hours, and once I asked him, what would you do again? If you could do your whole life, what would you change? And he said he would spend more time at home with his children. And when I say it to you, your head goes down, and me too. It's hard to juggle family and show business.
Work-life balance. I think I had a piece of something written on a piece of paper about, you know, you're a leading artist that people want you, not so much in your home city, but everywhere else. And to have this work-life balance.
You've got to move.
You've got to move. And you've got to be full power. You've got to give everything people want you.
Yes.
You know, not just simply get on the stage and do your act and go away. They want you, and they embrace time with you, and it takes time away from the kids that they're calling you, and you're like, I can't answer because I'm in the meeting, or I'm...
Yeah, and they say, when are you going to come see my concert? Can you come next week? I'm playing, my kids play instruments, and they were in the school orchestra, and I'm missing so many of them, or the school play, or important moments you miss. Because if you really want to be good in show business, you have to commit. And show business means, if you're good, theaters are calling and saying, please come here, please, we want you there, we want you there.
When, not 2020, how many days are you at home in a normal year?
Oh. I think out of 12 months, I'm home 2 months.
Ugh.
Yeah. Yeah. But this is the first time in my life that I've been home for 4 months.
So now you've got to get to know them. You've got to get to know the kids on a daily basis.
That's true. It's like I'm waking them up that, hey, you have a father who's here every day. And we're getting used to that. Now I'm afraid, you know...
To go back out on the road.
It was not easy to come here. I'm happy I came here to meet you and have this interview. But it's hard. That's a sad part of the success.
Yeah.
Or just, you know, if you're going to go into show business, don't have kids. Or you know what?
No, we need that.
If you're not super successful, I was successful, but I'm not super successful. If I was, I'd be in movies. Mm. And when you're in movies, then you have so much money that you can stay home, take a bath, and your work is working. For me, I'm not in movies, so every time I want to pay the bills, I have to go do a show somewhere.
Exactly. If you're home, you're not paying.
And then you get on this
circuit,
loop,
treadmill.
The circuit. Of the varieties and the travel and the traveling, as you mentioned earlier, private, it kills you.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that I had this break where I could stay home. And I think I'm going to teach more. I'm going to slow down performing and teach more.
Yeah.
Teaching is great because you could also go home and at night. I'm teaching a lot around Hanover, or people come. I'm offering workshops. People come. They travel to Hanover.
Do your kids understand the commitment that, because children, you know, I don't want to say that children are selfish, but they, you know, they are attracted to people who give them attention. you know, certainly when they're babies, they want somebody to pay the, to give them food
or and,
to.
And nobody better to give them attention than a mother and a father.
Right.
So, I guess at the end of the day, or when they're grown-ups, they'll look back and say, "Wow, look what our father, you know, Papa sacrificed his life so that we could live on a good level." I think they will. But my kids are teenagers. Are yours teenagers? I think yours are too.
One is a teenager, and yeah. The other one just hit 20.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
And as teenagers, they're not interested. They don't want to hear my sad story. If I have to, that I'm working for you. They don't want to hear that. They just want. They want time.
Yeah.
They want time.
Yeah.
It's a balance. Well, it's a balancing act.
Yeah, a constant, and it's a fast juggling, a speed juggling. I think sometimes.
Speed juggling.
Yeah, when you're on the road or because our business demands a lot of energy. Also, not just simply traveling.
Commitment.
Yeah, like you say, total commitment. That's for sure. And what was this? You were with Claudia Schiffer and Deborah Caulfield.
Yeah.
Two absolute megastars.
Yeah, they were. I don't know if people still remember them.
David Copperfield 3 months ago, about a week before the lockdown happened. I saw him perform in Vegas.
So they came to Roncalli, and David loved my show. We went to dinner together, and he was asking me similar questions like you, and how do you find your ideas? And he said, I'm going to come back tomorrow or the day after tomorrow with Claudia Schiffer again. But don't tell it to anybody, because I don't want the press to come, because I have a girlfriend in America, and I don't want her to find out.
Right.
So what did I do? I called the press.
Really?
And I said, David Copperfield's coming in 2 days. Come. Because, you know, sometimes you have to be an asshole.
Right.
And I wanted the press. I wanted this photograph. So they came.
And
David
then you pulled them in the mayonnaise.
And I pulled them in the mayonnaise. He didn't know that. And I pulled them in. I did it for the fun of I did it for my...
Must have been electric.
I did it for my career.
Because they were... Claudia, obviously, because she was Germany's sweet... Certainly one of Germany's sweethearts.
But was she was an international, she was the model of the world.
But was he that big in Germany at that time? Also?
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone knew?
They knew him from television and he was on tour. That's
so you had two absolute international megastars in the manege with you, and they didn't want anyone to...
And they couldn't say no, because they were sitting in the front row, and I said, come on, and it was interesting, because I could feel the resistance of both of them, but I did it selfishly. I said, you're coming, you know, in my unconsciously, I was thinking, you're coming to help my career.
Yeah.
And I helped his career, because he stole some ideas from me, and he was doing it in the show that I went to see some months later.
But, okay.
Yeah, it's fair.
It's fair.
Yeah, but he changed it. He was respectful and creative, and he would take some ideas and change it.
Do you stay in contact with any of these sort of people?
I'm in touch with Otto. We write to each other. Sometimes he comes to see my shows, and he surprised me in Hamburg when I did a solo show. He came to my on my
He's
birthday.
He's a friend
came.
To us at Europa Park. Friend of our
really?
Family. Yeah, Otto. Yeah.
Good guy, a lot of fun. Yeah.
And you're still in contact.
Yeah, on WhatsApp.
WhatsApp. Yeah, some people say it's not cool.
Yeah.
And musically, is this just? Did you work with these guys or were you?
Yeah, I opened for them a couple times, and they're from Hanover, so sometimes we meet up and we.
Scorpions.
We chat a little bit.
Was that your style of music as well?
Then it was. I love some of their stuff.
Fantastic. Back to this. I'm sure you could put a bubble up there. You know, the lone circus clown holding up the tent or holding it all together.
I think it was more like I'm trying to hold it all together. It was. It blew my mind in the beginning. It was just so much work to do. I couldn't believe the rhythm, the routine. I was performing. I never performed like that. Two shows a day.
Two or three.
For 7 months.
You had to do three
two or three shows.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. I just, you know, I said to Bernard after a week, I said, how do you do this? This is, I'm tired. That's me being, I'm exhausted. I can't believe I have to do this.
I'm not sure that people, I'm sure that the people do not realize the energy that you expend to perform.
That's true.
They do when they see an acrobat flying trapeze, doing triple somersault from one trapeze to the other, being caught, and they understand that. But I think they don't understand you because you're totally in it. All the time, because there's only you, and you've got to keep them. Because I think if you lose interest, they will lose immediate interest. No,
that's a good point. That's a good point. And they don't know how difficult it is because I sell it as it's very easy.
That's the thing. That's not the way the way you perform. It's just like you're just in yourself, and this is just like having an evening with Peter.
Yeah.
No, Peter's performing, but you don't know. This is...
They don't know that inside there's a little boy screaming, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, over and over and over.
Yeah. Well...
It's just the oh my God, it's the fear that what if it stops working? What if they don't laugh anymore? What am I going to do? Because you're funny today is no guarantee.
How I started off in the evening, that you come out with a, you know, a double somersault from an acrobat will always be visually impressive, but from you, the pressure to come out and make people laugh with all of the different mediums that they can get information from. Now you can do everything on YouTube, you can see everything on Instagram, Facebook, all these things, and you're coming out to humanly touch their soul while, you know, and make them physically have a physical movement because of what you're doing.
God, when I hear you say that, I'm scared.
No, but I hope that you'll come and perform at Europa Park, and our guest, who we appreciate, and it will be a great opportunity to have you come, and because you'll appreciate them, you most certainly will. More than just, it's not a job for you, it's a life. No, the way.
I want to work.
I'm very impressed.
I want to direct some shows with you. I want to do some of the comedy. I have a question. Why have you never asked me to come perform here? Like a lot of my colleagues have played here.
I've spoken to Dorothy for
my
many
manager.
Times, yeah. And it's about
timing.
Oh, yeah,
that's what she said. I asked her today, how come I never played here? She said, they asked, but you never had time.
It's a lot about timing, because to be honest, in we have you do the Palazzos.
Yeah.
The Palazzos are established things, contracts, and they go for a little bit longer than ours. And then when I've asked Dorothy, can you come to us, she'll say, oh, Peter's already booked for 4 or 5 months in a palazzo, be it where, or something like that. And then I said, I'm offering a 2-month contract, or because we have varying contracts. Not to say that we don't want you, is as I had in my timing, there were places I want to work at. I never worked at, because when I asked them for a job, they said, we don't need anyone, we're booked. And when they asked me, I said I was booked. So I've got a feeling that you're not going to stop soon. And I think that it's all about timing, the timing and availability.
Ian, do you want me?
Yeah, I would love you. Yeah, definitely. Thank you very much.
We're not allowed to do that.
Of course, you see.
Now
you say I'm a creation of my experience. Now I'm going to be all nervous.
We didn't touch. But thank metaphorically, you. Man, you're
yes,
in my arms.
Thank you very much for being on the Going Bananas show. I would like to say today I've made a friend that I appreciate.
Me too. That's nice. This is great. Now I want to find some popcorn.
Finish that popcorn that you bought?
Yeah, but the popcorn was delicious. I love salty popcorn. Yeah.
All right.
Typical American. Should we go? Let's go have a beer somewhere.
Yeah.